Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for coming by the OSCE office here.
Well, this morning in Tashkent, a lot is happening in the Uzbek capital.
Oh my goodness, it's been amazing.
You are a busy man. And the Uzbek government seems to be evaluating the elections, right?
Indeed.
They took place on December 22nd. We know what the OSCE election observation mission concluded.
Right. Very, very clear, very specific. You know, we observe these following things that, you know, that don't align with international standards, and we observe these things which do.
Right.
And it's a very clear statement, and that's one thing about the OSCE observers. They have this sort of standard of measurement, and they are consistent across all 50
sites.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's by the book.
Everywhere they go, they do it the same way everywhere, so no favoritism.
As one Uzbek official described it to me, it's like quite a nerdy, evaluation. But you're here. You've been here now since, since the summer of 2016.
So yeah.
You've seen the country's journey, right?
Indeed.
How are you evaluating yourself, aside from the observation missions?
Well, the first thing I like to say is that there's a lot of improvement, and you can't deny that. I mean, there's always still further to go, and that's one of the key elements of what's been going on. But we should not ignore the progress that's been made across this country, both in governance and in society generally. But a lot of things have changed for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a really interesting time to be here and kind of exciting in a way, really.
Election campaign, when you arrived in Tashkent, when you started your work in Uzbekistan as an OSCE coordinator, parties were almost invisible. Like, you know, we knew that they were parties,
yeah.
Official parties. But now they seem to exist.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have positions. They seem to have leaders and lots of followers, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
How did you see the election campaign?
You really saw the party leaders come into their own this time. You know, in the past, you wouldn't have known who a party leader was if you almost ran into him or her on the street. But now, you see them. They are personalities, they are strong presences, they've had their debates, and they actually were starting to poke at the other. You know, well, I don't like that platform, and I don't like your platform on that subject.
They have different characters,
yeah.
Actually. They're kind of, you know, unique in their own ways. We had a lot of criticism during the campaign. I mean, I've been here now since early December, and I think the party leaders are the most criticized folks around, and it's very interesting in our conversations with them. They're quite candid about their own performance. I mean, some of them have told me that, you know, yeah, I don't know, I'm not a politician. I've never really been a political leader, so I am learning as we go. So the entire country seemed to be going through some kind of a learning process, and
yep.
that journey is on, right?
Absolutely.
So that's where the OSCE then comes in as an assistance organization, as a political support organization. What do you think you could do to help this learning lesson to get stronger and wider and deeper?
Well, let me just go back very quickly to mention that the current election code is something that we were very much a part of. So we worked very closely with the Parliament and the Central Election Commission in particular to review what was wrong with the old code. And then we also got the OSCE ODIHR and the Venice Commission involved. And together we created this new election code, which was, you know, eventually agreed to by the Central Election Commission with their own adjustments.
They're very proud of that, actually.
Yeah, and I think they should be. I think there was a lot of work went into it. And once there was a draft, we helped the Central Election Commission and the Parliament hold a series of meetings around the country to introduce it, to talk about it, and to also look for additional comments and improvements, and many of them were taken into account. So the key element is that 23 pieces of old legislation were abolished by this new code. That's highly, highly significant. Okay, so now we have a legal basis for this new, for running elections. Now, Now we have to start thinking about how we can do some practical improvements. So giving the party leaders some training. Well, I won't say training and education, but shall we say the benefit of other experience. So let them see how party leaders do election campaigns in Western Europe or Canada, the US, other places where, you know, there's some really strong parties that have had some good success. And they can also learn from some failures of other mm-hmm. party leaders. Mm-hmm. There's been quite a few of those to look around. So that's the party leaders. And then we also have to start thinking about how do we educate the people of this country to learn about their involvement in democracy and how they see elections and how they need to work in the election process themselves. So what do they do on election day? What do they do before election day? Do they have a responsibility to follow the campaign and look at the different party platforms and think, okay, I kind of like that one the best and I like that one the least, and where am I going to put my vote? And this is important in a democracy too, of course. A democracy is of the people. We have to think about what kind of government we want. What do we want our government to do? What do we want and which one of the party leaders and the parties generally have the kind of platform that's closest to what we want as individuals, mm-hmm. as families, or even as extended families. And so party discussions, this political discussion should become part of the fabric of society here, as they should be in any country. And
we see them happening, actually.
It's starting to happen.
Yeah, more, and you know, what we see is that the Uzbek people are starting to take these parties seriously. So then, you know, and raising expectations, right? Mm-hmm. They want them to do better. They want them to really offer the solutions that they want to hear. So they want them to become sort of problem-solving machines eventually. But there's a long way to go.
Indeed. And there's if I can just interject, there's one other element that we haven't discussed, and that's the person between the party leadership and the people, which is the nominated person for their district or constituency. And how do we want them to act? What's their responsibility in this process? So they need to be out introducing themselves to everybody in their district. I'm representing whichever party they are, and these are my platforms, and they need to do that.
Absolutely.
As well. There needs to be this grassroots effort from them.
Yeah, and right now, that thing that you're describing is in a very primitive process, right?
They have some work to do.
So what we also heard a lot mm-hmm. during this election campaign and the aftermath of the elections is that, you know, perhaps still a lot was staged, a lot was orchestrated. You know, the level of trust mm-hmm. in the system is very low. And I think the Uzbek government hears that more than ever, and people are more vocal with that criticism than ever. Did you feel, as a diplomat here, as someone who's in close touch with both with the authorities and with the rest of the international community here, that any part of it was staged or orchestrated to some extent? What were they trying to control?
Yeah, there's two factors at work here. The first factor is you have to kind of remember what elections have taken place in this country since
the election records.
Yeah. So you think, okay, now what have they done in the past? So the past is sometimes a predictor of what happens in the future or today. So there's an element of those people who think, well, okay, what have they done? What's going to be different this time? So they're a little skeptical at the outset. And the other element is this. There's a lot of pressure on the Central Election Commission and anybody who's worried about these elections to get it right. And so perhaps there was more control than there should have been. And people who were maybe getting involved because they thought it wasn't being done right, and they shouldn't have been involved. See, because really it should be up to the Central Election Commission and the district election commissions, and the lower elections.
And the parties.
And the parties. And so nobody else should be involved. The executive authority should not be involved.
The administration.
Administrative effort should not. I mean, they provide a place and then give it to the election commission representatives and say, okay, this building or this part of the building is yours for the election. But then that should be the end of their involvement. And I think too many people were trying to get involved.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we kept on mentioning, and others, the members of the international media and observers, watchers, Uzbekistan watchers, both on social media and on the mainstream media, that this is a democratic test. This is a reform test for Uzbekistan. Did you feel like the Uzbek government felt that kind of challenge? Did you see any efforts by the Uzbek government to kind of live up to that? Like, yes, this is truly a reform test for us. We have to show something. We have to demonstrate something.
Yeah.
They did?
Definitely. No question. But it should not be a pass-fail.
Mm.
See, here's the point. I mean, nobody's going to get it right the first time or the second time or whatever. I mean,
you didn't see it that way.
I don't, because I have the benefit
you know what's happening in the background.
Yeah, and so there was certainly a feeling on the part of those in authority who said, this is a very, very important election for this country. We really need to get it right, so let's do our best to make it happen. And I really felt that very, very strongly.
Do you feel like this was a test for President Mirziyoyev?
No, I think he established what the parameters of the reforms need to be. You know, this action strategy that he sort of helped develop or sort of led the development of it back at the beginning of 2017. That is a very comprehensive document, and it's very closely related to OSC commitments too. So that sort of sets out the parameters. And then really it's up to the rest of us. And I say yes because I'm part of this international presence right now, and I'm part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be up to all the rest of us, those in leadership positions in government and society, and people like me, to take those parameters and put them into action, make these reforms take place.
So you feel, in a way, you also feel responsible in, you know, to make sure that the reform agenda is executed.
Absolutely. If I'm in this country right now, and I am,
you have a role to play.
I have a role to play, and I feel that very, very strongly.
And, you know, at times it seems that the members of the international community, the OSC, the United Nations, and then the embassies, right, both Western and those of some other major countries, they seem to be supporting President Mirziyoyev and his agenda unconditionally. At least it seems like you're very supportive and cheer for him. You constantly remind to the Uzbek people and the world that Uzbekistan is in the right path. Why is that? What do you see that?
Well, I'll go back to the action strategy that he led the development of. And I mentioned that action strategy is really closely related to OSC commitments. So speaking for myself, I look at that and I think,
this is exactly what we want him to do.
Yeah, I mean, where else in the OSCE world today, that's the other 56 of the 57 participating states of the OSCE, where do we see that? We don't. Nowhere is there anything like that anywhere else. And nor has there been anything like that in the last generation. You see? And so this is so important. How can I not support something that is so closely related to OSCE commitments? I have to cheer and say, let's move it, let's do it, let's do it tomorrow.
We hear the same thing from the United Nations, and it's quite impressive, you know. But what has it taken so far for you to convince the Uzbek system, the Uzbek leadership, to follow those commitments? You know, because, I mean, we know, looking at Uzbekistan's record, that for the longest time, they refused. At least they did not follow those commitments, right? They justified not following them. Mm-hmm. But now they are on that path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are you doing to them that they're following you?
Well, you know, it's hard to know because I mean, when I first arrived here, it was in the final months of the first president. And so I know what this country was like before that. And so I was aware of what was going on. I knew it was difficult to to try and get any movement on implementing OEC commitments. And so when there was a change of national leadership and President Mirzad took office, there was, you know, a kind of, okay, let's see what's going to happen. Let's see what happens next. And so almost within the first couple of months, we see this national action strategy. And I'm thinking, okay, let's have a look. So you go through the book and you go, wow. This is, so how do I help make that happen? That's really the question I've been asking myself. And so with my team here, and this is really important, the team that I have working for me here at the OEC.
And it's enlarging.
Oh, yeah.
It's expanding.
But there's some real veterans. Some of the national staff have been here more than 15 years. They know this country, of course, very well. But
from
they
heart
also,
to heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And they know OEC commitments. And so the team has been very, very much a part of suggesting different practical projects that we can implement that will help various parts of the government and society adopt certain of the commitments that are related to the action strategy.
How often do you get out of Tashkent?
Oh, at least once a month. Hmm. At least once a month.
And is it easy for you to travel? I mean, as a diplomat, you have no restrictions?
I never, not even in the first months after I came, I never experienced mm-hmm. any problem whatsoever.
Do you inform the Ministry of Foreign Affairs that you're about to do that? I mean, there is a protocol to follow,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But there used to be extra restrictions before, like various kinds of permissions that you needed to obtain.
Yeah. In the last 3 years, I haven't felt any problem at all. And generally, what we're doing is my travel out of the capital has been related to some particular project mm-hmm. activity. Mm-hmm. And so there's a notification that we're undertaking a series of project activities. And that's an ongoing process where we're constantly updating them as to what we're doing.
You obviously have a long list of goals in any country that, in any member country, right?
Yep.
But what are the priorities right now in Uzbekistan? I mean, one, we know that is elections and mm-hmm. Making sure that the country learns how to do democratic elections, which obviously is a long journey and it's a lot of work. But what other priorities do you have right now?
Let me suggest some key priorities. One is corruption, which I think there's some
deep.
It's deep. It's been in practice here for many, many
Something
decades,
that everybody
centuries.
Mentions
really,
as the first, number one problem.
Yeah.
Where
so, but we work on that. We try to identify parts where we can have an impact, and so we do a number of things. You know, for example, we had a huge business event where we talked about business integrity standards. Because business is part of it as well. So they need to have their internal standards about how they conduct business internationally and nationally. And so, you know, how do we do that so that we're not contributing to corruption? And we have to remind people of the specific problems of corruption. So let's just say that you have a doctor who maybe didn't do as well as they could have on their actual tests and that sort of thing. And then, I mean, we actually have a video clip that we helped make and we've seen on TV. And it shows a doctor who bribed to get into his position. And then he's the emergency doctor operating on a member of the family that he bribed. You know, I mean, how those things come back to get you. Or the policeman who takes a bribe for letting somebody go speeding, and then the next thing you know, it's the policeman's child who's killed it next to the school because someone was speeding. Those are specific videos that we made to try and hit home about how this impacts individuals. So that's corruption. Another element that's really, really important is justice and rule of law. And as the president himself has said, there's a nexus between economic growth and rule of law and justice and human rights. You can't have economic growth if you can't convince investors that they have a meaningful, proper justice system to protect their investment if they're going to bring some money into this country to create jobs and to help support this country. So how do we get that justice and rule of law? So we've been helping with the new Supreme Judges School. We helped them show them some opportunities to learn from other countries about what their curriculum should consist of, and we helped them see the ideal that judges should be training judges. So it shouldn't be the justice ministry; it should be judges training other judges. That helps create a truly independent judiciary. And in the office of the prosecutor general, I mean, we helped their academy with training related to justice and rule of law. So these are also very, very important things. So if you tackle corruption, if you work on justice and rule of law, and if you make it possible for every citizen, every business in this country to have a meaningful, true justice system if they've had problems, whether it's with their business or problems as individuals, then you get people to understand that, yes, I do have some rights. And the system is going to support me as an individual because I'm right, mm-hmm. not because I've done something else on the side. This is really critical.
There is a lot of cynicism about the role of international organizations, as you know, not just here in Uzbekistan, but around the world.
Yeah.
And I ask this from every member of the international community. How do you deal with that as you deal with the Uzbek government? Because there are a lot of cynical people in the system too, right?
Yeah.
They look at you and say, you know what? Your organization has been around for a long time. We have our own, you know, history and record. I know what you can really do and what you can't do.
Yeah.
So how do you respond to that? And also, how do you explain to the Uzbek public in general, things that they should expect from you,
mm-hmm.
and they should not.
Yeah.
Like things that you're not going to be able to
right.
do.
Right. What can't I do? What I can.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Actually, this is a very important thing that you just mentioned. How do you? I call it building confidence in us.
Trust.
Building confidence in
right.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So from the minute I arrive, I'm very clear about what we can do and what we can't do. And we actually created in the last few years, this is called criteria to be met for project consideration.
Mm.
There's 11 items on this list.
Interesting.
And it starts with things like the mandate of the field operation, the memorandum of understanding. What we have to do is implement OSC commitments. So
mm-hmm.
if somebody says, oh, we want to buy a bunch of cars for the Ministry of Health.
Yeah, that's not
I'm actually. Sorry, that's not us. There's no OSC commitments that said, that, okay? So they have to be national priorities, so that means generally prior to the host government, but also of society generally. And then we have some within the OSCE rules, so that's important. We have communication, consultation with others, and that sort of thing. And we want it balanced across all three dimensions
mm-hmm.
of the OSCE. So a long list
okay.
here.
Values, I see.
Yeah.
And, you know, economically and efficient, economic and efficient use of resources. I see women's security issues.
Indeed.
And gender parity,
yep.
something that the OSCE is increasingly vocal about.
Precisely. Now, here's the thing. This is fully transparent.
Mm.
Okay, so we share this with everybody
there
and
are.
Anybody. And it's available in Russian and English. So it's
yeah.
easily understandable. And we're really upfront with this. Anybody who wants to do...
And the realization of this is shared.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not just you, but the
right,
other
right.
party should also
And
do.
So this is the first thing you do. And then the second thing you do is every one of us internationals who comes to this country has to recognize that we're not in our own country. And we're in Uzbekistan. So how do we have to learn about this country. We have to learn about the customs and the culture and traditions and history and food and language.
Yeah, which
and
you
all,
speak
yeah.
quite well, by the way. Very impressive.
So yeah, this is so important because if I don't understand all of that, how can I hope to suggest projects? Okay?
Connect, right?
Or, and to connect with this country. Yes, I have a team of really amazing national staff, as I've said. They're truly spectacular people. And so it's my job, really, to support them. But I can't do that the way I should unless I really understand. And as I often say now, I have some Uzbekistan in my heart. I really do. I feel in
and
my heart.
And you're originally from Canada.
Yes.
You also mentioned that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
there's
Canadian
a lot of...
with a special Uzbek love.
Well... Canada has a good record of multilateralism and embracing people from around the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a good Uzbekistan community in near Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And you know, this
and also
is
also in British Columbia.
In British Columbia too, where I'm from. So these are big things for. I mean, Canada is, I think, I like to think it's a good example for a lot of other countries in the world to embrace the idea that we can all live together. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the various communities in my home city of Vancouver, there's an ethnic Chinese community and a South Asian community of various nationalities, and there's people from Europe and people from Africa and South America and the Caribbean, and they're all living in harmony. I mean, our neighbors, where we live, I mean, in our own street, there's at least 8 or 9 different nationalities right in our own street, and we're all friendly and share experiences. It's great. And there's other similarities. I mean, Uzbekistan and Canada have almost the same population. We are both very much influenced by a large, fairly close neighbor who has a language that influences us, and the movie culture and TV and news. We're very much influenced in that way, both of us, by our different neighbors. So there's a lot of similarities there, you know?
You, one last question. You worked in Kyrgyzstan before coming to Uzbekistan. And I mean, we know that the OSC is quite active across the region, right?
Yeah.
What is special about the OSC's approach to Uzbekistan now? I guess it's because of the reforms, right?
Yeah.
But what else? What have you done to really kind of make it relevant to today's challenges? And
I mean, everything we do is country specific. So yes, we bring ideas from elsewhere. So we look at we as the OSC staff here, we try to think about what countries might be good options.
Yeah,
and we pull in from all 56 of the other participating states at various times for various different topics and subjects. So that's important and that's significant. And I think that's probably the best way to handle this kind of thing, where you want to reach out. There's one other thing though, and this is something else. I often say my job is not only to bring foreign experiences here, but take the Uzbekistan experience and share it outside. So let me just give you an example. I mean, I love talking about the Mahoma system because it's a unique Uzbekistan system where you have these neighborhoods that are tightly knit, and they really, because there's a self-government part of that, you know, people look after each other more than you see in most countries. I mean,
yeah, but you know, a lot of Uzbeks resent that system.
Well,
yeah,
sometimes
they
think that
like
somebody knows too much of their business.
Right, that, and also they feel like it's a control system. It's a control management system, which essentially stifles their individual freedoms, their private rights, and, you know, all of these things. But yes, you're right, it's unique in many ways, and it's something that the Uzbek government has tried to promote for a long time. Do you still see the Mahala communities as powerful bodies?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I don't think they have as much power now as they maybe did a generation or two generations ago. But, you know, the history of the Mahala system goes back centuries. It's been around for a long, long time.
Community
thing, and there's parts of the world that could learn from that example, I think, where they don't have any community at all. They exist in a city and they don't know their neighbors, they don't know the people around them. And I think that's a real shame, because there's much to be gained from knowing who is around you and supporting each other. This is the key, supporting each other in the neighborhood so that everybody, it benefits, it lifts everybody up.
You travel to Europe a lot, obviously to Vienna, where the OSC headquarters are. So when they ask you a very simple question about how are things going in Uzbekistan, what do you tell them nowadays?
The basic line is, the brief answer is things are coming along. There's still a lot further to go, but there's been a lot of progress, and that's what's so important. You know, there's still many things to be done. I mean, we're still 2019 marks the middle year of the action strategy. There's still many of the priorities that need some effort.
And you mentioned your commitments, and you are committed to hold the administration, President Mirziyoyev, accountable, right? I mean,
well, but it's not me. The OSCE says that each OSCE participating state is accountable to every other participating state for implementing OSCE commitments. So the other 56 should be looking at this one, and if it was Canada, the other 56 look at Canada. I mean, they're all accountable to each other. So it's a system where every week in Vienna, there's an opportunity for every one of the 57 to stand up and say, we heard about such and such that happened in your country. Why aren't you honoring the OSCE commitments related to that?
So that culture is very much there.
Still, yes.
Because, you know, I mean, Uzbeks know that they haven't followed the international obligations, you know, for a long time. And now pretty much every international organization calls them on, you know, to do that.
Yeah.
And many Uzbek diplomats tell us that we're very much committed. We're very serious about our international obligations. We're not running away from them.
Yeah, and they're facing up to.
You see,
and
that's now, a genuine.
Dialogue is there. See, this is what's happening now. But that didn't happen 3 or 4 years ago. 4 years ago, say.
Mm-hmm.
There was no dialogue at that time. There was no honest dialogue about, you know, we need to do this and this and this and this, because they would just say, we're not talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
We won't talk about that. Sorry. No discussion. Now, there's dialogue. I mean, the discussions we're having after the election, just as an example. There's a lot more discussion now than there was in the election in December 2016. And that's the one I was here for. I mean, sure, before that, there was even less discussion. The point is now, there's a lot of engagement and a lot of dialogue, which was not present before. And if you don't have this dialogue, if you're not willing to even discuss what the issues are, there will never be any change.
Okay, well, major difference. Thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time.
It's good to be here in Tashkent, engaging you and others.
Thanks for your efforts. Thank you.